Good afternoon. I'm going to call the Tax Committee to order. And we are just delighted that Representative Bernardi and Representative Wills are here to be with us. And we're hoping you could both join us at the table. And we look forward to hearing your bill. And I apologize, Representative Bernardi. I think there was a miscommunication that you weren't so sure that your bill was up today. And Representative Wills, I know we talked about your bill really early this session. So welcome, and we're glad you're both here. And I think there's a little bit difference in the bills, but I thought what would be best to do is just hear from you both, and then we can take testimony on both of your bills at the same time. So with that, whichever the two of you would like to start, I think we'll need a motion to put your bills in front of us. So,
yes.
Oh, we don't have a quorum yet, so we'll just start. So please, Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our veteran here was ready to serve. I called him 45 minutes ago, and he is now here. So I want to thank
you,
David Stanton, for coming.
Thank you so much. Please, Representative Wells.
I guess I'll go first. So thank you, Madam Chair,
sure,
and members, for the opportunity to present our bills today. It's kind of a unique situation. Our bills are very similar. It's House File 532 and 533, and it is providing a tax credit for employers who hire veterans. So I just wanted to give a little bit of background on my bill, and then Representative Bernardi will take over and kind of explain the differences. So I'm guessing we can't move it yet since we don't have a quorum.
No, we don't have a quorum. So just fire away. We'll do both, and when we have a quorum, we'll move them.
I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be able to present this bill to you today. I think it's a very important piece of legislation. It has strong bipartisan support. We have 50 signers on this bill. I also have a clone bill, 851, and we have about a 50-50 split of Republicans and Democrats, so we can really see that this is a nonpartisan issue. This is a good jobs bill that helps out our veterans. And the reason I feel we need this bill is because the unemployment rate for veterans has been as high as almost 23% as of 2011, and it's currently at almost 12%, which is more than double our unemployment rate for civilian counterparts in the state of Minnesota. And this is a problem because our service members are coming back to Minnesota from serving overseas or even just out of states, and they're struggling to find jobs and reintegrate into civilian life. I had the opportunity to visit the 934th Airlift Wing at Fort Snelling and meet some of our veterans and talk about their experiences and what they have been going through. And it's indeed a struggle for them to find work. So I also have extended family members who have served in our military or are currently serving. And as a state representative, I represent two cities that are beyond the Yellow Ribbon cities, Apple Valley and Rosemount. And the Red Bulls 34th Infantry Division is in Rosemount, so very proud of them and want to represent them well. And I just really believe that Minnesota needs to do a better job of taking care of our veterans. And this really is a win-win situation. We create an incentive for the employers and help the veterans find jobs. And so I know I have a testifier here today who's going to explain more on the nuts and the bolts of the bill, but I wanted to get that introduction. So is it okay if we go to testimony?
I think we'd like to hear the two of you as the authors and then take the testimony on all of them. I mean, I think you're all here for the same concept, right?
Yes, sure.
Tax credit for hiring veterans. So if that's okay, we'll go to Representative Bernardi, and she can talk about hers. And please.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm pleased to be before the committee members today and want to share this bill with you. I have had constituents in my district while I've been door knocking tell me about the difficulties it's been to find a job. And it's very challenging, and veterans in our state have like two times the unemployment rate than other citizens in our state. And it just seems wrong that they served our country and have kept our freedom, and I want to make sure that they not only can have jobs for their own lives, but they actually are great contributors to our economy, and we want to make sure that they're working in Minnesota. David Stanton is with me today, and he will testify as well. The difference, we have someone that will go in the technical part of the bill. The main difference is that my bill allows people that are underemployed to be able to get the tax credit, that the employer would be able to get a tax credit for that. And I want to share a quick story with you about that. Last week we had Tim Mulroy, who had served in the Army with us, and I want to, and he had been looking for work, I believe, for about a year, And he just, I want to report some good news. He found a job between that hearing about a week ago or 2 weeks ago. Dennis here networked with him and helped give him some tips on his resume. And he now, we live in New Brighton. He got a job on out by Lake Minnetonka at Lafayette's, and he's a cook dishwasher. And so he may be a type of person that would qualify for the underemployment. He has training in journalism, and he also is going to school in the broadcasting film-type industry. So he is so pleased to have a job, and I'm so glad to be able to report that today. So that's the biggest part, the difference in our bills, and we'll give you the technical part about the other one. But with lots going on in Minnesota, and we're going to talk about our stadium coming up here, there's a great opportunity to get our veterans working and being helping our economy moving.
Okay, thank you both so much, and we still don't have a quorum. So if we can take your testifiers, that would be great. We'd love to hear from the three of you, so thank you. Whoever would like to go first.
I would ask Dennis Davis to speak first. He's going to go through the bill.
Thank you so much. Welcome.
Madam Chair, representatives, for the record, my name is Dennis Davis. I'm a veteran and still serving. My service record includes 14th year of service. I've served in two different branches, both active duty and reserves, both enlisted and officer. I've deployed twice in support of Operations Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. I'm also the founder and chief translation officer for a company by the name of Metafrazo. We help companies create sustainable, replicatable veteran hiring initiatives. I speak both military and corporate hiring. I have over a decade of private talent acquisition and hiring experience. I've seen hundreds of thousands of resumes. I've interviewed thousands of candidates, and I've hired hundreds of people. I truly understand, on the other side of the fence, the challenges that the veterans go through. Our rich military history in Minnesota goes all the way back to the Civil War and all conflicts since. We have 46 Medal of Honor winners in the that are connections to the state of Minnesota. During service in Iraq, the Red Bulls lost 16 and received 79 Purple Hearts. They served longer in Iraq than any other unit, active duty, guard, or reserve. So why are we here today? Veteran unemployment is at or near all-time highs. Those serving since 2001 have reached as high as 22.9%, as Representative Will said in late 2011. Currently, for all veterans serving, it's nearly 12%, over twice the state rate of 5.5% for unemployment. The majority of the military population in Minnesota are Guard and Reserve components, members of Guard and Reserve units. Over the last 12 years, many have deployed repeatedly and have left employers weary of continued absence of employees and thus hesitant to hire active service members for fear they will be deployed. One of the first interview questions I've always gotten when I've gone to interview for another job is, welcome back, thank you for your service. When will you be deploying again? It's one of the first questions you get. I've personally transitioned on and off active orders no less than four times over 8 years. This translates into fewer veterans hired and a disproportionately high unemployment rate for veterans. As operational tempos overseas slow, more veterans will be in the market. With proposed budget cuts, the current administration for more than 200,000 will exit the service nationally each of the next 5 years. So if we have a challenge now with another 200,000 each year coming out with the cuts and the downsizing, it's only going to get worse. Pending changes here at the 934th Airlift Wing locally, the Air Force Reserve unit that I happen to be a part of, could mean hundreds of jobs cut. They are slated to change mission, and that changing of mission potentially could eliminate jobs. That's just one story of many. Certainly for more information with that, I would refer you to the Public Affairs Office at the 934th. But that is coming. We don't know the future with that. So this bill will help employers hire veterans, give them the incentive once they see the power that the veteran brings to the workforce, and they have the ability to hire more of them. They want to hire more of them, regardless of whether the credit's there or not. So what can we do? House File 532 and its Senate Companion 337 provides an incentive for employers to hire veterans. As Representative Wills stated, we have broad bipartisan support. 50 authors just in the House already support it. And it has bipartisan support in the Senate as well. Secretary of State, who I believe you have a letter from, supports it. Employer support is growing. I believe you may have a memorandum of support from employers as well. That's growing in the community. The governor's office has put forward the desire to support this bill, specifically potentially in a veterans omnibus bill addressing only veterans issues. This truly is a nonpartisan issue. I spoke with their military affairs person there this morning, and they had a meeting with a group that we're a part of, legislative group, and they are supporting this as well. So at all levels, we have support, and it truly is a nonpartisan issue. I worked with the revisor's office helping craft this bill to mirror current federal legislation known as WOTC, which is Work Opportunity Tax Credits, and that provides credits at the federal level. It's been enacted by the current administration, WOTC, and during their previous term, and has recently been extended for credits at the federal level hiring veterans. House File 532, and again the Senate Companion, represents the best opportunity available to incentivize behavior which will positively impact all in the state. Credit levels aim to achieve a revenue-neutral bill, truly a win-win-win for the state, employers, and veterans. For every veteran hired and no longer dependent on the state for the state for benefits, the people of Minnesota win. At the $3,000 level, credit would pay for itself in 5 weeks. At $1,500 level, the credit would pay for itself in less than 3 weeks. At the $500 level, credit would pay for itself in less than 1 week should they need benefits. For every company hiring a veteran and receiving the credit, they win and the people of Minnesota win. The credit offsets costs of hiring and it helps build a stronger company. Veteran performance can increase company performance and productivity. A stronger company means a stronger economy and more jobs available. The entire state wins. Most of all, veterans win. The ripple effects of this are wide and far-reaching. Again, it's a win-win-win. Our veterans have given so much and will continue to always be there for us. Will you be there for them? More must be done to help our veterans find meaningful employment. House File 532 and the Senate Companion 337 does more and is the best tool we have. I cannot remember a time in recent memory when both sides have come together in such a fashion. If you all know of a time, I'd certainly be willing to hear it, but coming forward in such a fashion to craft legislation which could impact so many, it's truly a nonpartisan issue, and I respectfully ask for your support on this matter.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Davis. We're going to pause here for just a second because Representative Drazkowski is now going to move House File 532 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. That's okay with you, right?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Okay, so that's your bill is before us, Representative Wills. Okay, and we are now going to lay that same bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And Representative Schoen now moves House File 533 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. That motion is before us, and we'll lay that one over, too, for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And so we've got them in front of us. We're going to continue with testimony. And Representative Bernardi, did you want your testifier, or would this gentleman like to be next? So we formally got our bills now that we're having a hearing on them now. So please, whoever you'd like next.
Okay, Chair Linchetsky, we will have David Stanton, Dr. David Stanton, actually, I should give him his credentials, and then Jerry Kaiser, who will testify after that. So thank you very much.
Okay, please, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Coming here respectfully asking your support for the bill 533 because it covers the category that I'm in, the disabled veteran and underemployed. In fact, I'm not employed at all. I was downsized at 2008 during the beginning of the recession, and because I'm older and disabled, it has been difficult. I've applied at over 200 places and received 4 interviews. So it hasn't been great for me. I do have a disability income from the Veterans Administration, so I'm not broke or on unemployment, so I can't claim that. But this bill would encourage employers to hire people like myself because there would be a benefit to them in doing it, and it would certainly be a benefit, I think, to the state as well, because once I'm getting a paycheck, you're getting taxes. And while I don't know what kind of taxes you would get from one vet being hired. I think if there were a bunch of us that got hired and got our numbers down to comparable levels with the rest of the state unemployment, I think that the tax revenue base would certainly go up. On a personal note, I've served as a fellow veteran, as already mentioned, in his service. I was in the Navy. I did a career. I served in Lebanon and Libya and Persian Gulf and Desert Storm, and got a number of the campaign ribbons, including the Secretary of the Navy's Navy Achievement Medal, which is, I think, the second highest medal they give out other than combat ribbon. So did that, got a doctoral degree. I was a drug and alcohol counselor for the Navy and a data analyst. And so my background is good as far as working when I've had a job. And I volunteer a lot with the veterans and try to get in front of committees if I can to encourage you to look at veterans' issues, look at ways that you can give us a hand up rather than a hand out. There's too much of that out there. We don't want a handout because all that is, it's a fish for a day. We really, really want a hand up where we get to learn how to fish and earn an income. So please consider approving this bill. I'm not going to get into the dynamics between 532 and 533. I'm absolutely delighted that both parties are supporting these in such strong level, because us veterans come from all branches of political spectrum, and we really are not here to support a DFL or Republican position, but just trying to get veterans taken care of. So please consider it. I respectfully thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Stanton. Welcome. And I should have said, Mr. Davis and Dr. Stanton, thank you so much for your service on behalf of all of us. I think we all feel that way, and we're glad you're here with us today. Please.
Good morning, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm a combat disabled Vietnam veteran. I did two tours in Vietnam in 1968 to 1970. And I'm the co-chairman of the Military Action Group and the vice chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council. That represents the 380,000+ veterans in the state of Minnesota, their family members, and those interested parties. We really strongly agree that these, either one of these two bills would be great. In my involvement with the veterans organization, this is a change from what it's been in the past. When we got back, you know, 40 years ago, things weren't the very best for veterans in the state of Minnesota. We've done 180 degrees change in that, and we appreciate the both legislators doing this. Things have changed a lot, making Minnesota more veteran-friendly. It's imperative that this goes through. This is kind of a caveat on the bill that passed last year that lets private companies ask for veterans' preference and not get sued by any entity. And that the only two states in the union that has that, that's Minnesota and Washington State. This would really help the Viking Stadium, Minnesota Sports Facilities Authority, get more veteran-owned businesses in there and the workforce there. The United Veterans Legislative Council is the entity that's going to be vetting the veteran-owned businesses and helping with the workforce process, which should be, what, 7,500 people working on that thing if we get 10% of those. This bill would encourage businesses to hire veterans to get that credit. It would make Mortenson Construction Company very happy. They're both veterans themselves. I've talked to them personally. They think this is a great bill that would encourage their contractors who are going to be trying to get contracts to do that. So this, along with all the other businesses in the state of Minnesota, will really be a great thing. I applaud both House and Senate to get this done. Thank you, ma'am.
And thank you, Mr. Kaiser, for your service as well. We're glad you're here today. Are there other testifiers for or against this bill? These bills, I should say. questions from members, for either of our authors or testifiers? Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and this is a question for anyone. Thank you for bringing this, and I know there's been extensive study over the years of why our employment rate is lower. Part of that is because cycling back from deployments, I know my unit, it takes a while to get up to speed. That could be part of the reason for the lower employment rate. But can you tell me what were the other major reasons that were discovered for the lower employment rate of our veterans?
Is that for Mr. Davis or Representative Wells?
Well, I was just going to clarify. I think you mean higher as opposed to lower. It's a higher unemployment rate.
Oh, yeah. Higher. Thank you.
I think Mr. Davis wanted to respond to that.
Please, Mr. Davis. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, I apologize for having my back to you all, so not intentional. With my time in service, in addition to my time in the private sector, as I said, the first question that I get asked when I was being interviewed is, when are you deploying again? The challenge that we have as veterans in the state of Minnesota is we're Guard and Reserve units typically. They don't understand, because we don't have a large active duty presence like some of the southern states and the coast states, where they see military all the time. So there's a cultural difference, number one. There are very few people in human resources or in hiring capacities, corporate America overall, that are veterans. I mean, we could take a poll here of who's a veteran on the committee. There just aren't that many out there as a percentage of the overall population in the workforce. And then when human resources is running a process and they don't have any veterans that are helping run that process, and very few of the hiring managers are veterans, there are specific challenges with translating that experience. What this bill hopes to do is provide that incentive to say, we need to take an extra look at veterans. When the veteran gets in typical veteran fashion, they tend to outwork their counterparts. And when they do that, they go, wow, I need to be hiring more people like that. That's what helps drive down the unemployment rate, because the companies will see the value of the veteran. And in doing so, they're going to want to hire more veterans. And that prevents people from going on benefits, which is a good thing. That increases tax revenue, which is a good thing. We want our people working. And all veterans want to pay the taxes, so if they're gainfully employed. Does that answer your question, Representative Lesh?
Well, Madam Chair, and thank you, but no. I mean, a little bit it does, and I appreciate it. And that may be the only reason that you gave, that may be the only reason, the anecdotal evidence that they look at your resume, your application, your experience, and they say, whoa, military member, they deploy, they have great experience. Unfortunately, that makes me think about when are they leaving again. And if that's the reason, that's fine, but I was wondering if you had any metrics with which you can associate the lower employment rate.
Mr. Davis. And you can provide later, too, if you don't feel like you're equipped to take a shot at this right now, but Mr. Davis, please.
Absolutely, Madam Chair, Representative Lesh. I think some of those metrics are really difficult to even come up with. You know, there are certainly other, some anecdotal evidence. Some of the population that is struggling do tend to be younger, as well as we heard from the other testifier, on the older side. As well, and they're going to be facing some of the same challenges that the regular population is going to be facing. But I think, again, it comes down to they don't see the same value that we bring, because they don't see how things translate from the military. And really, the military is just like any other organization. Mm-hmm. We build roads, we fix things, we serve meals, so it runs just like any other organization. So as far as metrics to be able to give those to you today, do I have them at my fingertips? No. Is there, I think, potentially where you might be going, is there a magic bullet that we could use out there? I don't know that there is. I don't think this solves the entire problem, but it's a tool that we have in our toolkit to be able to impact the employer's decision to look more at veterans, hire the right veteran, and when they do, that performance is going to translate into their desire to hire more veterans, whether the tax credit stays in place or goes away. Again, it's one tool out of many, But it's a start that we can partner in that private-public partnership to be able to do it.
If I could ask another question.
Representative Lesh, before your next question, I think you raise a really good point. How many people on this committee are either active or veterans? I think there's two. So Representative Lesh,
Madam Chair,
one.
I don't count because
yes,
I don't have 180 days of continuous federal orders.
Okay,
I'm in a point. So.
We think you count, Representative Lesh. And Representative Earhart, are there other veterans on this committee or people who are active now? So I think your point is well made. We've got two folks in the room, and I think that's just important to note that, you know, that's just exactly how you presented it. So thank you for that. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In my unit, I have a lot of young guys, infantry, so it's all guys, and their primary occupation is student. They benefit greatly by the generous educational programs offered by the state of Minnesota, as well as by the federal government, which, incidentally, if members here are not aware, was just recently shut down last week. Military veterans, those who are trying to use their benefits to go to school and better themselves through higher education, are in a real predicament now because of the federal sequester. But is that considered as a factor of unemployment? Does it count if you are a student and that's your primary occupation, or does that count as unemployed or underemployed?
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, from my understanding, if somebody comes off of orders and goes back, so they've been deployed, and they come back off of orders and go to school, when those orders end, they qualify for unemployment. They can then go and go to school, use those benefits, but they still are on unemployment. Regardless of whether they take the job right after coming back or they go to school, the challenges still remain. You've got the same candidate that may be 22, 23 years old that's completed a college degree has none of the experiences that the veteran has. And even though you're in an infantry unit, those infantry soldiers, be it male or female, and any career field, have great skills and values, leadership skills that they bring back, and those are oftentimes in the private sector overlooked because they don't have Excel spreadsheets on their resume, just to throw something out there. They don't have those things on their resume, and they say, well, you were infantry, you went out and shot things, you ran convoys, whatever you did, and they don't see what they truly bring. And again, this credit helps provide that. So do those younger ones count? They can count. I don't know if they apply for unemployment benefits or not, because I can't know every veteran. But certainly when they come back, they qualify for that as they roll off of orders, and they're able to then get those benefits. And if we can help them find a job that the benefit would be there, they certainly would drop off benefits and be paying into revenue versus taking out of the state coffers for the benefits.
Okay. Thank you.
And I think Representative Wills had a comment on your question, Representative Lesh. Representative Wills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Representative Lesh. It is a good point that the majority of the unemployed veterans are in school right now. And I think that's all the more reason why we do need a bill like this, because once they get out of school, they're going to be looking for work. And we need to make sure that they have an opportunity. And when there's already that stigma against veterans, we want to try to level the playing field with civilians looking for work as well.
Representative Lesh, brother?
Thank you. No, thank you for that. I think you're right. I think it's a good bill. I like it, and I support it, and it's a good effort. It's moving
in the
right direction.
You did sign on to it.
I did sign on to it? Well, then it's a great idea. Madam Chair, I will say, though, as was stated earlier by the testimony, they have these big books, these volumes, where it tells you, depending on what your MOS is, your military occupational specialty, you're in communications or something, it's got these list of jobs that you can use after you leave the military, and those are the jobs that you apply for. And unfortunately, with infantry, that list is really short, because what's your job? You go out and shoot things and blow things up. And it's not as technical as some of the other ones. So that's helpful to be working in. And I know many of you have been working in that same area, too. So thanks for doing that.
Thank you. Thank you, both authors. We've heard them both. Did either of you want to add anything else? I should add, I had sent a note to the Department of Revenue in the audience, because I remembered that the governor also proposed a tax credit for veterans, and that was in 2012. It was part of his Jobs Now tax credit, where there was a credit offered for each veteran hired. So I think you're right in characterizing that Governor Dayton is supporting provisions to help hire veterans as well. So did either one of you have closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. So we really appreciate the opportunity to bring both these bills before you. And I hope we were able to answer all the questions. And I just wanted to reiterate that for House File 532, it's a $3,000 non-refundable tax credit for an employer who hires a disabled veteran. And then there's also a category for an unemployed veteran. The unemployed veteran would bring in a non-refundable tax credit of $1,500. And the third category is for any other veteran who doesn't fall into the other two categories, is $500. And so that tax credit would be going against their tax liability as opposed to getting a check in the mail. So just wanted to clarify that and really appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Wells. Representative Bernardi.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to, what I've learned so much from veterans is that mission is possible, and that mission possible. They really are mission-oriented and have a lot to contribute to our economy and to grow our economy. And I think this mission is possible to help our veterans with this tax credit, especially during this economic time. It's a really hard time right now, and so anything to help that happen. And so many of us have stories to share about our family members, our friends, our neighbors, our coworkers. And I believe that this is just one tool in the toolbox to help support our veterans, and we need to do whatever we can to protect their civil rights and make sure that they have the opportunity to be contributors to our society and help our economy. So thank you very much.
Thank you both so much, and thanks for your service and for your testifiers being here today. Representative Wells, yes.
I apologize. I'm still learning how to present a bill. I did have a question just on the technicality of rather than having House File 532 being laid over for possible inclusion in the tax omnibus bill, is there an opportunity to have it sent back to the State Gov and Vets Committee to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Vets Omnibus Bill?
No, there's not, because it's a tax credit, so we wouldn't let that committee carry a tax bill. And I think there's a long tradition, bipartisanly, that tax chairs ensure that renegade finance chairs are walking around with tax provisions. So this would be the place. This is where it will be as we make a decision going forward in the omnibus tax bills.
I can respect that. Just wanted to clarify.
Thank you for asking. You're not the only one who asks. Lots of people ask, and we really appreciate you being here. Okay, so we're done with these two bills because we've already laid them over, so thank you all for being here. And we're going to go to Representative Myra, who I think just talked to me about this yesterday and asked for a hearing, and I guess I had kind of overlooked it. So members, if there's things you're working on that we're missing here, just let us know. So Representative Myra now moves her own bill, which is House File 1381 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Representative Myra.
Madam Chair and members, House File 1381 allows customers to pay sales tax on their used car rent-to-own or lease-to-own transactions on a periodic basis rather than all up front. Individuals who rent or lease used cars generally don't have credit ratings that are very good. And so what that means is that they have to come up with $700 to $1,100 up front in cash to be able to have that kind of transaction. Because that's such a financial hardship, these transactions just don't happen. I have a testifier with me today that would like to address the bill, and his name is Don Blowers.
Welcome, Mr. Blowers. Appreciate you being here.
Madam Chairman, representatives, members, thanks for an opportunity to speak. I work for Northland Auto. I'm not a car dealer. I have no direct personal interest in this other than the fact that we help car dealers all over the United States. One of the things that happened here was unintentional, but in 2005, the legislator created a problem for the financially challenged people when they moved that tax on leased cars from being collected monthly to upfront. It didn't hurt the new car leases because those taxes are financed along with the car. But for credit-challenged people, it caused a problem because they don't have a credit rating. They can't finance the tax upfront with the car. They're having trouble financing the car itself. And so this is a huge problem. So this bill would let that tax move back so that it's collected monthly. And what's happened as a result of the bill from 2005, most of these credit-challenged people are forced to go out and buy a car off Craigslist. Car's not maintained very well. It's not a safe car. But that's what they can afford, and so they buy it. And the state only gets a $10 fee one time on those cars. Any car under $3,000, it's not sales taxable. It's a $10 fee one time. By changing this and voting for this bill, we can change that so that the tax is collected monthly. These folks can afford to pay, I kind of minimize it a little at $650, but it would be $22.75 per month along with their lease payment. They can afford that, where they can't afford to scrape together $650, $700 to pay one time. And that difference then will let them lease a better, safer car from a used car dealer, and that car is going to have to maintain its insurance. The dealer will see to that because his name's on the title. And so we have cars that are in better shape. We have cars that are safer for the public, insured. All around, everybody wins on this. And the state collects, and here's the math on it. Instead of a $10 payment one time, the state collects $22.75 every month for 36 months. So at the end of the day, we're looking at winners all around here. The credit challenged person gets a better car that they don't have as many problems with. It's safer to be on the road. It's insured. The dealer gets his profit from the sale, obviously. But the deal is done according to state regulations, and that's safer all around. And the state, instead of collecting thousands in fees, will collect millions in sales tax over that same period of time. So it's a good bill for everyone. There's not a downside to it, and that's why we'd like to see it done. And I'd be happy to take questions from anyone.
Yeah. Representative Meyer, you have another testifier? What do you?
Al Lynch is here to answer any questions
okay.
you might have.
Well, we're glad you're with us. Thank you for being here. Does anyone have questions? Would anyone like to testify, anyone else for or against this bill? Okay, any questions? Representative Davids, can I ask you, I don't know if you're tracking on this, I think you put this in your bill, didn't you?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Madam Chair.
So, you know, I am trying to think through the thought. Do we know what happened in 2005? Was that right, according to the testimony? What was the change? Or Ms. Dalton, I don't think she's here right now, but oh, there she is. That's what I'm confused about. So I don't know what the legislature did. And you're right, Mr. Is it Blower, we always do things that have unintended consequences. We try not to, but it happens all the time. So, Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, prior to 2005, the tax on all leased vehicles was collected on each lease payment. And I believe the change in 2005 had to do with shifting money, because what happens is it moves money from one fiscal year to another, and it
yes. Ms. Dalton, is this what Governor Pawlenty had taken that piece and moved it forward, or biennium, and then everyone agreed to that? Is that
basically what happened in 2005 is instead of having the sales tax on leased motor vehicles be paid proportionately at each lease payment, all of it was paid up front at the time the lease was signed. And
It was a gimmick, basically, to catch some money going forward to balance. And it was small, wasn't it? Fairly small, $7 million or something like that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm not exactly sure how much money was involved.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's a relatively small amount.
I see. Okay. I'm understanding this now. Okay. Thank you, Representative Myra. I appreciate it. Representative Earhart?
Madam Chair, we don't have a fiscal on this, but there must
we
be
don't?
Madam Chair?
That's my fault. So that's my fault. I'll just... Right, it's coming right now? Oh, so I guess we do. And that's because we, Representative Meyer and I talked, and so we scheduled it quickly. So I put the Department of Revenue in a tough spot. Okay, so
Madam Chair, the fiscal note that's in everybody's file is the one from last year, since we had to move so quickly between yesterday and today.
Okay.
But it kind of can give you an idea of the magnitude of the bill.
Ms. Templin, would you be willing to guess? I don't know if you're catching what's going on. We're talking about last year's revenue estimate on Representative Myra's bill, and so this I put her in this tough spot by scheduling this bill that she had requested, so revenue didn't have time to rescore this provision. Would you be willing to, you know, I mean, I got to believe it's really close to this price with just a year passing. Can you comment on how the revenue estimate could change if there had been time? Ms. Templin.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. I think there are assumptions that go into each revenue estimate, and there are assumptions for this estimate related to the average annual payments and the number of cars that will go through the rent-to-own contracts. If those assumptions change, then the estimate would be changed. I can't imagine that they would change drastically. So I think that the 2012 estimate that you have in front of you is probably pretty close.
Okay. Thank you. Further questions? Representative Mansell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Myra, your testifier used the term financially challenged and credit challenged. And when I look at the concept of rent to own, I have to ask the question, is your bill good for poor people or is it good for the sellers of cheap cars?
Representative Myra? Or your testifiers?
Sure. Madam Chairman and Councilman members, this is Alan Lynch. I designed this program and built the program 23 years ago in the United States. The purpose that I built, that I designed this and built it and came out with rent-to-own for the first time in the United States for vehicles was very simple. In the buy-here, pay-here market, what's called the buy-here, pay-here market in the world for that subprime marketplace, there's $265 billion a year industry. In that industry, the repossession rate on average over the years is 24%. This last year in 2011, it was 30.39% repossession rate. I said this to myself, this is insanity. Those poor people are getting hurt more with the way we finance cars now. It's absolute insanity when you think about that. Every 100 cars that goes out there, 30 of those are coming back. And now the customer's got a repossession on their credit. So I came up with the rent-to-own idea and concept that if the customer can't make a payment, if they run into financial difficulty, they can just bring the car back. My contract is the only contract in the United States where they can return the vehicle anytime they want for any reason and walk away with no bills, no bad credit, anything. In fact, it is so popular. You just had it's become so popular across the United States. I have thousands of dealers nationwide on that program. It's so popular, the Pentagon wants my program for the military. We just opened our first store at the Panama City near the Air Force Base. We're going to be opening four more in the next 90 days. The military loves the program for them because they can bring the car back anytime they want and walk away if they get transferred. And we've been working on that for some time. Our goal is to open 100 stores for the military as quickly as possible. It is good for the consumer. It's also good for the dealer because now the dealer, since it's a lease, the dealer can charge less money for that vehicle than the normal, what they would call the buy-here, pay-here dealer in the United States. In fact, if you take the identical car on both programs, you'll find that our customers pay $1,700 less for that for a particular car than a customer would with a buy-here, pay-here. It's a huge difference. It's a great program for poorer people. It's a much better program than what exists out there today. So,
Representative Manzo.
Fine.
Okay, thank you.
Just one more example, talking about the taxes. This is my third year to get this bill passed, and both years it was not signed by the governor. When I first showed it, I showed on my program in the state of Louisiana in 2010 had collected $3.5 million in taxes on a monthly basis on my program. The state of Minnesota had collected $45,000 with their upfront money. So you see the difference? My company is in Minnesota.
Representative Mansell, please.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, now having heard that, further explanation, I have to ask the question, those taxes paid in Louisiana because of the wonderful virtues of the program are being extracted from poor people.
Correct. But they're extracted either way, whether you extract them up front or do it on a monthly basis. I would go for that if Minnesota would say, no, we're not going to charge poor people any more taxes. I wouldn't have a problem with that at all.
Okay.
That'd be even better.
Yeah, that'd be even better, yeah. Then my program would really look good.
Okay.
Further questions? Anyone else from the public? I have no idea what microphone is buzzing, but I wish someone's phone or something. I'm not sure. If you have closing comments, otherwise we'll just lay it over for possible.
Madam Chair, thank you so much for hearing this on such short notice.
Yes,
I really
appreciate it. Thank you. And we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion on this tax. So I want to mention just quickly that we've had questions from folks on the governor's written testimony, and Ms. Jensen and Ms. Kunish and Mr. Rubis have worked so hard for those two hearings we had on the governor's tax bill to get all those people in the room for both caucuses, and all those names are in the minutes for anyone who's trying to figure out who was there. And we've approved those. And Ms. Jensen has two books of three-ring binders of all the testimony that we received. Because remember, a lot of people the second day handed in written testimony instead of testifying. So that is available to the public, to the members, to anybody who wants to go through that. Ms. Jensen has that all, and just come to her office and get it, and you'll have a treasure trove of information in there. Trust me on that. So I just wanted you to know it was there.
Madam Chair, we have a new public hearing.
You know, I don't know. I actually have not. We're all trying to learn a little bit about what's going on there, but we've all been in meetings, so we'll see how much difference there is. So, thank you, and we are going to adjourn unless there's something else. We're adjourned. Thank you.